Welcome to Carmen Madrid's podcast. Are you preparing for the Delhi B2 or C1 exam? This podcast is made just for you. Carmen Madrid is an accredited examiner from the Instituto Cervantes and your new tutor for this exam. Each episode features a conversation between two speakers generated using advanced AI technology. These conversations are about a previous episode of a Spanish podcast on the Delhi B2 and C1 exams. But that's not all. We offer a range of services to support your learning journey. One-on-one and group Spanish classes, books for Delhi preparation to help you study effectively, exclusive access to the News Club and Reading Club, plus our advanced grammar workshop to deepen your understanding of Spanish. You can find everything at DelhiExam.com. Join us in taking your Spanish to the next level. I'll leave you with my AI friends. Enjoy.
Today, we are strapping in for an extremely specific high-stakes knowledge drop. Mm-hmm. If you are preparing for the DEELE C1 Spanish certification, you know the feeling, the high energy, the complex grammar, and then the ultimate gatekeeper, the oral exam.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically, we are diving deep into task 2 of Prueba 4. This is the moment candidates dread. You know, they often imagine it as some kind of terrifying bright light interrogation.
It absolutely has that reputation. And our mission today is to, well, pull back the curtain on this task, the interview, and provide you, the listener, with a clear, calm structure for success.
Okay.
We really want to demystify those 4 to 6 minutes.
And this deep dive, which is episode 244, it's built on a really valuable resource, specifically episode 116 of the Source podcast in Spanish.
That's right.
For those of you who want the high-level English summary or maybe just a quick reference, you can find the related info in the About DLE in English section of the DLEExam.com website.
And of course, if you find yourself needing further preparation or maybe some individualized courses to put this all into practice, you can always reach out directly via carmenmadridonline@gmail.com.
Great.
But yes, before we get into the how-to, let's formally define this particular dragon we're slaying. Now, we're talking about task 2, the interview. And our goal is to utterly debunk its reputation.
The interrogation.
The interrogation, exactly. And transform it into what should be the most predictable and manageable part of your entire speaking test.
Predictable sounds good when you're facing a high-stakes exam. So first, let's just situate it. We call it the oral exam, but what's the official name?
The entire oral test is called Prueba 4. Expression, mediation, interotaxon, orales y MIO.
EMIO.
Yeah, and that name is important. It's a comprehensive display of your communication skills, not just, you know, giving a monologue. It has 3 tasks in total.
3 tasks, okay.
1 task of pure expression, which is task 1, the monologue, and then 2 tasks of interaction, tasks 2 and 3.
And it's a big lift, but the time breakdown is really key here. The total speaking time for the whole test is 20 minutes. But you get that crucial 20 minutes of prep time beforehand.
That 20 minutes of prep time is where you win the test.
Yeah,
it's just that simple. Because you use it for both task 1 and task 2.
Both of them.
And strategically, look at the weighting. Task 2, this short interview we're talking about, accounts for 30% of the entire oral test score.
30%?
That's the exact same weight as the much longer monologue in task 1.
Yep.
So you absolutely cannot afford to treat this segment lightly. It's high value, high reward.
So mechanically, it comes right after the monologue. You finish task 1, you take a breath, and then bam, task 2 starts.
Exactly. The examiner signals that task 1 has ended, and then you transition right into the interview. Mm-hmm. And here is that reality check we promised, which honestly should immediately calm your nerves.
Okay.
It's a formal interview lasting only 4 to 6 minutes.
That's it. 4 to 6 minutes.
That's it. It's an intense burst, but it's over fast.
Wow. 4 to 6 minutes. That's ridiculously short. But if it's so short, what's the single biggest strategic mistake candidates make right at the start? I mean, the pressure must still be immense.
The biggest mistake is panic, leading to a lack of concentration. I see it all the time.
Okay.
You know, candidates are often a bit more relaxed here than during the monologue because they've overcome that initial solo stress.
Right. The worst is over, they think.
Yeah. But that relaxation can actually lead to them rushing their answers or just failing to concentrate on the precise nature of the examiner's question. And you have to remember, the entire focus of task 2 is interaction based entirely on the theme you just presented.
So you already know the topic.
You have topic familiarity, which is a huge advantage. So concentration is really the only missing piece.
That familiarity must be a huge psychological advantage, knowing you aren't jumping to some entirely new subject. Now, you mentioned interaction. How is the examiner actually evaluating my ability to interact?
So since the 2024 updates, the grading categories really clarify what they're looking for. They're scoring you on 4 key areas. Fluid age or fluency.
Okay.
Correction. So accuracy. Alkins, which is your range or scope of language.
So am I using C1 vocabulary?
Exactly. And finally, entrevista y cumplimiento de la tarea tú. Basically, interview and compliance with the task.
Let's unpack that last one. What does that actually mean, compliance with the task?
It specifically means, did you answer the question that was asked? And did you sustain a complex, advanced conversation?
Okay, let's talk about that, because I think the deepest fear for any candidate is that the examiner is actively trying to trip them up, that they're the ogre of the C1 test.
That myth is entirely incorrect, and understanding why is your key to preparation.
How so?
What's fascinating here is that the examiners have a preset list of questions they have to follow. They aren't just inventing these questions on the spot.
Why is that so critical? Why the rigid list?
Consistency. I mean, it's absolutely necessary to ensure the smallest possible difference between the questions asked to candidates across all countries. Whether you're taking the exam in Madrid or Manila, it has to be fair.
That makes sense.
And critically, the examiner's ultimate goal is positive. Our job is to discover your maximum level so we can assign you the highest possible score. We are actively looking for evidence that you can handle complex language. We want you to succeed.
So if I know they have a script, I can almost reverse engineer my preparation.
Yes.
I should be spending that 20 minutes of prep time thinking about potential questions from the article, not just drafting my monologue.
Absolutely. Think of it this way. The examiner is forced to stay within certain lanes.
Yeah.
Your job is to predict those lanes.
Okay.
And the source material tells us there are three types of questions that examiners must ask. They have to ask from all three sections. If you can anticipate these three, you've basically won the preparation battle.
Let's unpack the structure then. What is the first type of question I should expect?
First, the most straightforward. Ampliación del tema. Extension of the topic.
Okay.
These are questions directly about the source text or very, very closely related to it. They're just verifying your understanding and encouraging you to expand on the arguments.
So they might start with something like, according to the text, or in Spanish, según el texto.
Precisely. Or they might ask for clarification on something the author said, your opinion on a specific point, or, you know, to debate the advantages or disadvantages of the article's main proposal. It's all textual analysis and expansion.
Got it. Now, what about the second type? This one sounds a little more intimidating. Ponerte en situación. Situational or hypothetical questions.
This is where C1 proficiency really shines. It tests your ability to function in a hypothetical, real-world context using complex structures like, you know, the subjunctive or conditional tenses.
So the interviewer proposes a situation related to the theme.
And the candidate has to make a decision or respond to that specific scenario.
Yeah. Can you give us an example? Let's say the article was about the environmental impact of plastic. What would a situational question sound like versus a simple amplification one?
Okay, a simple amplification question might be, what are the three main disadvantages of plastic packaging mentioned in the text? It's a straightforward summary.
Right.
A situational question, however, would be something like, imagine you are the CEO of a major supermarket chain. The government has just proposed a new tax on all non-recyclable materials. What three immediate and three long-term decisions would you implement? And what economic factors would you prioritize when explaining this to your shareholders?
Ah, I see. That forces you into a really advanced register, right? It requires nuanced decision-making, conditional statements.
And domain-specific vocabulary. It's exactly what C1 is. It connects the theory to a practical application.
Okay. And the final required type?
The final type brings the theme home, so to speak.
The personalized ones.
Yes. The third section is preguntas personales, personal questions. Now, these are still related to the theme of the text, but they're personalized for you.
Like, has this ever happened to you?
Exactly. Have you ever been in a similar situation? Or has this specific phenomenon happened to you? And crucially, they often involve cultural comparison. Is the situation described in the article similar or different in your country? And why do you think that is?
So we have the three content areas the questions have to cover. The source material also outlined five general frameworks, like opinion, amplification, comparison. How do those fit in?
That's a great question. The three types, amplification, situational, and personal, they dictate the topic. The five frameworks dictate the type of response you need to give.
Ah, okay.
So for example, a question in the ampliación del tema section might use the comparison framework. How does the author's proposal compare to the alternative solutions mentioned?
Or A personal question could use the exemplification framework, like, could you give an example from your own life of when this happened?
Exactly. They are tools the examiner uses within the required content area. If you practice answering those five formats against any C1 topic, you're essentially prepared for whatever angle the examiner is going to take.
Preparation is half the battle, but execution is what earns that 30%. So let's get to the practical playbook. We've distilled this down to the 10 commandments for survival and brilliance in task 2.
I like that.
Let's group them into 3 stages: mindset, structure, and polish. So starting with mindset.
Commandment number 1, maintain calm. Now, I know telling someone to be calm never works.
Never.
So let's give you the physical strategy. In that 20 minutes of prep time, once you have your notes, take 60 seconds. Close your eyes, breathe, and remind yourself. The examiner is an ally. This isn't meditation. It's reframing the whole interaction.
That makes sense. You're reframing it as a demonstration, not a test.
Yeah.
Okay. Commandment 2 relates to that concentration you mentioned earlier.
Listen carefully. Do not launch into a response like it's a race to fill the time. Make sure you fully understand the question. If it has multiple parts, and it's C1, they often do internally break it down before you even start talking.
Getting the nuance right is half the battle.
It really is.
Now we move to structure, which is critical for showing C1 level discourse. Commandment 3, structure your responses. What does a C1 structure actually look like?
It has to be complex. We advise a minimum of 3 parts: a general affirmation, then development, and a conclusion. But the development section is where C1 is achieved. You have to move away from simple sentences. Think subordinate clauses, relative clauses, indirect speech. You must argue and develop every single response. Short yes or no answers are, well, they're forbidden.
Because they offer no proof of your level.
None at all.
So instead of saying, I disagree because the data is old, what's the C1 equivalent?
Something more like, while I recognize the validity of the central argument, I feel compelled to disagree with the final assertion, inasmuch as the data upon which the conclusion is predicated seems to be significantly outdated.
Wow.
Leading, in my estimation, to a potentially flawed outcome. That's the level of complexity and academic nuance they're looking for.
That immediately sounds like a native academic.
Yeah,
which leads right into number 4, use connectors.
Right. If you're developing that kind of complex idea, you must use C1 connectors. Examiners are listening past the basics like here or Perot. You have to show advanced connection.
So things like no obstante.
Exactly. No obstante, nevertheless, a pesar de que, in spite of the fact that, por consiguiente, consequently. These signal sophistication and help you organize your thoughts.
And what makes the structure engaging? Commandment 5, give examples.
Examiners love examples. Absolutely love them.
Why?
Because they show that you've moved past just memorizing things and can apply the language dynamically. Real-world examples, personal stories, historical facts. As long as they're relevant, they're gold.
That makes it grounded and memorable. Okay, Commandment 6, show your opinion. How far can you go with this?
Your responses are open. You can express your genuine thoughts, provided they relate back to the theme. But, and this is a big but remember Commandment 8, maintain a formal and academic tone.
Right.
You can have a strong opinion, but express it with balanced, formal language.
Oh.
It's a professional interview. Save any political rants for after the exam.
Now for the polish section, where the score really jumps, number 7 is all about vocabulary.
Varied vocabulary at the C1 level. This is your moment to unleash all that complex vocabulary you've been accumulating, as our source material says, like a squirrel storing nuts for the winter.
Heckles. I like that.
Don't rely on B2 language. If you learned a high-level synonym for important, use it. If you mastered a C1 idiom related to the topic, integrate it naturally. You have to actively demonstrate the breadth of your LCANTs.
But how do I integrate those squirrel nuts without sounding forced?
The key is integration, not decoration. Don't just tack on big words. Use your complex vocabulary within the framework of those complex sentences we discussed. So instead of, the problem is very serious, try, the gravity of the situation is undeniable.
Use the lexicon to elevate the structure.
That's it, exactly.
We've covered tone with Commandment 8, keep it formal. That brings us to one of the hardest parts, pacing. Commandment 9, control time.
This is critical in a 4 to 6 minute window. Your answers can't be telegrams, too short.
Right.
Nor can they be presidential speeches, just long, rambling monologues that eat up all the time. Good rule of thumb for task two is aiming for responses that are about 45 to 60 seconds long.
That feels like a good length. Sustained, but not dominating.
Right. If you hit that mark, you're sustaining complex discourse without taking over the interaction.
How do you practically monitor that time in the moment when your adrenaline is just spiking?
Practice recording yourself. But during the test, use physical cues. If you hear yourself take maybe 3 deep breaths to transition between points, you've probably hit the sweet spot.
And if you're rambling.
If you realize you haven't drawn a breath and you're still talking, force yourself to finish the sentence and conclude. Better to have 3 structured 60-second answers than 1 3-minute rant.
And finally, number 10 is the strategic escape hatch. Repregunta. Ask for clarification.
Yes, and this is highly strategic. It is much, much better than inventing an answer about a topic you haven't understood.
Because they can't score you correctly if you're off topic.
Exactly. But if you ask for clarification politely, the examiner has to give you a helpful clue. You can use C1 level phrases like, te refieres a, do you mean?
Well,
or the very advanced, me preguntas desde un punto de vista socioeconómico, meramente ético.
Oh, that's brilliant. You're leveraging the examiner's obligation. By asking a specific question back, you force them to narrow the scope, which makes your job easier, and it shows a high level of interaction.
It checks the box for the entrevista y complemento criterion, and it buys you a moment to think. It's a win-win.
So what does this all mean for the candidate? I mean, the key takeaway here is structure, 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 preparation, and maintaining that reframed calm. You need to treat this like an interesting academic conversation, not a terrifying interrogation.
And for practical practice, we highly encourage you to invent questions, use those 5 frameworks, and record yourself. Listening back will quickly tell you if your answers are too short or too long.
And as the source material recommends, you can practice with friends, family, or even if you have to, your cat.
Chuckles. Just remember, the cat might look interested, especially if you have food, but only a human can give you that necessary C1 feedback.
That's true.
Indeed. But ultimately, mastering this demanding task is a huge confidence booster. If you can handle the structured pressure, the 3 content areas, and the demand for complex C1 discourse in just 4 to 6 minutes, well, you're ready to demonstrate your Spanish level to the world. You have nothing left to fear.